When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You raped her! You murdered her! You killed her children!
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Mr. Blog, and this is Game of Microphones, episode 4.
And we, once again, we're presenting to you a segment that we recorded for Walking Dead Cast. This time it's the one we recorded in July of last year, 2014.
Yeah, it was right after season 4 ended. Right?
And we added another person. We keep adding one more until we get to the full Game of Microphones crew. This time, Gracie Liu was in on that. She came out from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Just to do that, right?
That was, yeah. That's exactly why she came out on that one. Cool. That was pretty awesome.
And it was fun. And it's probably the last time we'll all be in the same place. We'll see.
Hopefully not.
So that's all five of us. And then, you know, when we start, I already mentioned this before, but when we start doing the podcast episode by episode in season 5, it'll just be 3 of us at a time.
You get a rotating cast. It's going to be fun because are there any 2 episodes that are going to be the same crew?
No. There's exactly 10 permutations of 3 hosts when you have a pool of five to choose from, which is pretty cool. And then at the end, we decide who was the best and who gets to take home the golden microphone.
And then whoever was the worst gets beheaded. That's the way it works, right? Yeah.
That's right. Or we're going to vote somebody out of the podcast.
They get invited to a wedding. That's what's going to happen.
That's right. 2 of us will get married and the rest will get killed. Or I guess the people who get married are the ones who are
being killed. That's the danger.
This is season 4. So you need to be all caught up on Game of Thrones up until now. If you want to listen to this and not be spoiled, because it's going to be filled with spoilers.
Yeah, that's the point of it at that point.
Should we just go right into it?
Yeah, why not?
All right. So, top 3 highlights for Game of Thrones season 4. Who wants to go first? Why don't we start with you?
All right. So I'm not sure how all of you are pronouncing her name, but I'm pronouncing her Lisa. So my number 3 is Lisa gets to try her hand at flying down the moon door. The episode is called Mockingbird. And the whole thing is Sansa is kissed by Peter Baelish in the snow outside in the little courtyard. And basically Aunt Lisa sees it and she is mad. And so she goes and sort of harasses Sansa by the moon door. But Baelish intervenes in time and instead pushes Lisa to her death.
Which is great. I love that in this show. A lot of shows you'll go, I wish something would happen and it doesn't. And then this show, sometimes it does, or a lot of times
it does. Almost always it brutal. Does. Yeah.
Big things. I did not expect it.
Not to skip totally into a different thing, but I was like, yes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. This is one of those moments. I mean, Lisa was becoming crazier and crazier, yeah. and you knew that something had to give.
I guess this show has both. They have, when you really want somebody to die, they do. And when you really don't, they still do.
That's true.
And Littlefinger is always playing a long game.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, what's he doing screwing around up there in the veil with that crazy woman? Oh, that's what he was doing.
Do you think, is he in love with Sansa?
It seems like it, right?
See, well, here are kind of issues about
we're not book readers.
The information. Well, okay, so three of us here are book readers, so mm-hmm. we kind of have a little more insight into some of that. And one of the big things is that Sansa looks a great deal like Catelyn.
And okay,
it was kind of clear in the show. He talked wistfully about her, Catelyn, and then he kind of transferred that. It seemed like he's transferred his love over onto her.
Yeah. So, I mean, love may be a strong word for what he's feeling.
I don't think he loves Sansa.
No.
I think he genuinely loved Catelyn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was
that
something
part of him
genuine
is long
that he was
gone and he is
her.
Strictly all about himself. So, I think Sansa reminds him of what
loved. There's, do you think there's some genuine emotion going on, right? It's not all just an act, the kiss.
Oh, I think that was purely because he knew that Lysa was watching out the window and he was trying to stir
piss
it
her
up.
Off.
I agree. Yes. Completely contrived and strategic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's nothing he does that is not strategic.
Wow.
I think it was both, a little bit of both. I think there was actually genuinely some emotion stirred there because he fell so hard for what's her name. But
Catelyn.
Yeah. But if it wasn't for wanting to make Lysa, right, jealous, then he wouldn't have done it. But who knows?
And Sansa still means, can legitimize rule over the North. And that's why a lot of people are still.
And how awesome was her transformation into the black dress and the black hair, when she came back out.
Oh, my
completely
God.
Completely transformed woman at this point. Yes. It was like, whoa, she's now... I think that was sort of the introduction to, look, Sansa's now playing the Game of Thrones.
She's no longer a pawn. She's a player now.
Do you think
for the first
that
time.
She got it on Littlefinger?
No.
But I think at this point, it's just, fuck lemon cakes. It's all about she's now playing the
having
game.
Some
she
agency.
Lemon
right?
cakes
I'm just being a victim.
Delicious.
Exactly.
Which is good, because I was getting tired of that.
Everybody, but that's the thing.
Well, I think everybody was tired of that in season one, so.
She was designed to be annoying at the get-go.
One thing about her is... This is going to sound kind of perverted, but because it's been 4 years, she's getting pretty hot.
And that's the reason why they aged up all the characters from the books as well. I mean, she is getting, and she's also one of the tallest actors on the entire show. She's already about 5'9" or something like that. She towers over everybody. And there was that uncomfortable moment where she's standing there with Baelish when she's in her black getup, and she's got to be a good 4 or 5 inches taller than the guy. And it's kind of funny. It's like, I don't even think she's wearing heels. She's in flats, They should have put him on heels or put him on a milk crate or something.
Well, that's part
tiny.
Of his character, though.
It is, and he's called Littlefinger, I'm sure, for a reason.
I thought it had to do that he came with from the finger.
I know the real reason is, but...
my number three is Braavos.
Yeah.
So I just like the whole idea of Braavos and everything that sort of mysteriously swirls around it. Yakin Hagar was back in the second season, but there's still echoes of that, especially at the very end of this third season when Arya heads off to Braavos. But I also really love the Iron Bank. So we've spent this whole show watching everybody be afraid of Tyrion Lannister. He's kind of the badass of the whole Seven Kingdoms, and he got all the Starks killed off, and he's manipulating everything. Yeah. And then you find out that he's terrified of the Iron Bank. He's basically like, if we don't pay back the Iron Bank, we're screwed. So you realize that those guys really have it going on over there.
I was a little, I ended up liking it, but it did make him seem less imposing. And I sort of enjoyed the feeling of, man, how are they ever going to
take care of this guy. He's so powerful. And then it was sort of like, oh, wow, he's totally in debt.
Well, and
they bring those practicalities into it a lot. Yeah, in this third season, all of a sudden they're worried about money a lot.
And they made it very dramatic, so it worked.
Well, really, and casting Mark Gatiss, of all people.
Yes.
As the representative, I can't remember his name right now, but the representative of the Iron Bank.
He was great.
He was
brilliant
great.
Casting.
Yeah. He was great.
And for those of you who don't know, he's also he does some of the writing duties on Sherlock and does play Mycroft Holmes. Right. So it's
brilliantly. And he's also co-creator of Doctor Who.
He is, yes, exactly. So he is one hell of an amazing actor, yeah, amazing is. Mind. And to see him in that
Stannis
role is great.
That went to them, right?
Yes.
Eventually, it was Stannis.
So we got to see. I was really happy that we got to see the Iron Bank.
And they were very skeptical.
And Braavos in general. The Titan of Braavos, as they sail into Braavos, and to see the Titan, amazing. That giant statue, is just like, oh, that was awesome. Cool. And there was a little piece of me that's like, come on, everybody wants to look up and see what's under the skirt there. The Titan. You know Davos is kind of glancing at Why? You don't want to see that? Come on.
But I like the mystery of the Iron Bank and of Braavos because it's not quite clear why they are so powerful and why they inspire fear. But there's definitely a lot going on there.
And
who's the Stannis' buddy who came with him?
Davos.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about because I have my fingers curled under because they're missing fingers.
And just to bring everything even further back, now Braavos is the home of Cyrio Forel, who was the water dancer that taught Arya how to sword fight.
Not today.
And it was Yakan Hakkar who gave her the coin. Say, whenever, you know, if you meet a Braavosi, you give her the coin and you say Valar Morghulis. And David, the proper response to Valar Morghulis?
Valar Dohaeris.
Exactly.
What? So is it like a knock-knock joke?
Sort of. Yeah.
Your turn.
Well, my number three was Stannis arriving at the Battle of the Wall. When he finally shows up and the way his whole troops move in and do that pincher move on the wildlings, and then the way that it was so filmed so perfectly when you have no idea who the hell showed up and who did all that, and then out of the mist comes Stannis and Davos and Melisandre. That was just such an amazing reveal. It was so well done. And I just, it made an amazing episode just that much better. And it was just great. So that's my very relatively simple number three, was simply Stannis saving the day.
It was good to see that Stannis sometimes comes off like a weenie, I think.
Yeah.
And it was good to see, he can be very powerful. But on the other hand, I was sort of like, the wildlings aren't as powerful as I thought.
This goes back to something earlier on, which is where the wall, Master Aemon sent out so many ravens all over the kingdom saying, look, we got some serious trouble coming up. Mm-hmm. Everybody ignored it except
Stannis.
Davos.
Oh.
Davos was the only one. And he wouldn't have read it if he hadn't learned how to read. So the whole thing about him learning how to read.
The girl with the face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shireen. Yeah. So
it's really all thanks to her.
In many ways, yes. And because of that, because he was the only one that read that and realized, wait a minute, the king of the realm protects the realm. Not King's Landing, but the realm. And if that is the greatest threat, that's where you need to be. That is how you be kingly. You ditch this Game of Thrones crap going on in King's Landing, and you go up to the wall and you take care of the real danger, and that's how you become king.
That's exactly right. Did Melisandre also play a part in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She saw it in the flame.
So what was going on with John and the Mance Rayder? I forgot exactly. John was there to kill him, right? But. Or to try. But were they actually starting to make a deal or something, or no?
Well, I think the most important part, at least to me, that came out of that is to learn that, I mean, Mance, his goal...
He seemed like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Mance is a cool dude.
His goal was not to conquer, but just to get past that wall because he wanted the wall for safety. And I think that's really why, you said they're not that powerful. But, I mean, they just have different goals than what you might have thought. They just want the safety of the wall.
That totally changed my feeling about all of it.
Yep.
Because
you think all along they're fighting to get in, and they're really fighting to get out.
Yeah,
they're fighting to get out of the north.
Safety.
Yes.
And because they and the Night's Watch and now Stannis and Melisandre, they understand the real threat to Westeros. And it's not this crap going on in King's Landing. It is the White Walkers. Period. It is the others.
Yep. Right.
That's my exactly number three. Right.
That was a great one.
Grace.
Well, mine is, and we touched on it a little bit, but it's Littlefinger and his plans. Peter Baelish, he's always been someone, he's like such an unsavory character, but I've always found him extremely intriguing. And just from the beginning, we've kind of always known that he's had this plan and he's just a really patient guy. And he's in it for the long term, you know, like David was saying that, you know, he's playing the long game. And I just like this season, we're really seeing the pieces fall into place. And it's so exciting for me to watch. And like the reveal, it was kind of a slow reveal of how, like, who was behind Joffrey's death. And and then learning that, you know, he was making an alliance with the Tyrells. You know, he's making...
Or the thing in the beginning, that he's the one who kicked off the whole show, right?
Yep.
By killing...
John Arryn.
Yes, yeah, yes. The reveal that he had Lysa kill her husband, yeah. John Arryn. Yeah, so he has been...
And that's what got everything started, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
He is really a patient man.
That's a long game.
It is.
Okay, so George R. R. Martin has stated many times that the thing with the book is that every chapter is a point of view. So it's a POV chapter. So it's like an Arya chapter, a Ned Stark chapter, whatever it is. And he's always said there are only three characters in the entire series who will never have a POV chapter because he would then learn too much.
Yes.
Littlefinger, Varys, and Howland Reed, the father of Jojen and Mira Reed, the ones who were taking Bran up into the north there. Mm-hmm. He was with Ned Stark during all the stuff that happened during Robert's Rebellion. So we will never hear from those three because they know too much.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
Do we know that yet in the TV series, or do we only know that through the books that he was with Ned Stark?
I think they've mentioned it, but in passing, and it's not even really hammered home in the books, other than the fact that it keeps coming up. Yes, he was with Ned Stark. Yeah. So,
Long game. It's George R. Martin plays that.
Yeah,
my turn. Yeah, hopefully not too long.
I think a lesser series of books or television show would have started with Robert's Rebellion when all this stuff happened. But instead, we get it revealed to us in glimpses over this brilliant years.
And there's a lot of history.
And all the seeds of everything now. Yeah.
It's sort of evocative of Lord of the Rings. They had a lot of, you can tell it's a full world where lots of stuff has happened. Mm-hmm. I think when they asked George R. R. Martin recently, you know, hey, your fans worry that you'll die before you finish.
He was so pissed about that.
He said, well, tell them to fuck off or something like that.
No, he basically flipped them all off. He gave the finger. It's a great video.
He's like, that's rude.
Yeah.
Didn't he say every time he gets bothered, he'll kill off another character we love?
That's an awesome response.
There's plenty of characters. My number three is Dario's fine tot booty. I'm just kidding. No,
it is.
We had a Google Doc where we were writing all these down, and somebody filled in my number three for me.
Who did that?
Actually, I put that as your number one.
Okay, I'll save it then. So you put as one of your items Oberyn.
Yes.
And I thought you were already going to have talked about that, but I just want to specifically talk about his death scene.
Oh, fair enough. Well, go for it.
So as soon as he when he first came on the scene, I wasn't so sure about him because I don't like cocky people. But by the time they got to the scene where he's chosen to be the fighter for Tyrion, I totally dug him. I thought he was the coolest ever. And I was like, shit, he's fighting this huge guy. He's going to be gone because they always kill off the ones that I like. And then he was dancing around acting cocky and I'm like, see, and then he started to get the upper hand and he was really kicking the guy's ass and it looked good. And right when I let my heart believe that he could live, maybe this time, gouging his eyes.
And that may have been one of the most gruesome deaths the show has ever delivered to us, man. Oh my God, that was something else.
It was like a knife in the heart. Or maybe thumbs in the eyes.
Because and they did an amazing job of beginning off the scene. You know, you grew to love this guy. Because you realize he was just, he was fair, he was just a decent guy, and he just fucking wanted revenge, man. That's
for a noble cause, because his sister got raped and broken in half.
And his little niece and nephew were dashed against the wall. Mm. I mean, the details of their murder is horrific.
Yes.
And the mountain has been, you know, guess you could say public enemy number one in the realm for quite a while. I mean, Ned Stark set Beric Dondarrion out to get the mountain in season one, mm-hmm. and they'd been hunting him the whole freaking time. And they'd gone through three different actors until we finally got the second strongest man in the world, the Icelandic giant Thor.
He was great.
I miss the first guy.
So do I. Conan Stevens was amazing. He was the best. He's also 8 feet in real life, which was pretty amazing.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah, but he left to go do the Hobbit movies. He's one of
and then
the
I think
orcs.
They replaced Is him with CGI. No.
Yeah, they did replace him with CGI.
The guy, I don't even know the actor's name, but the only time I think we saw him, he was like sitting down and he did not look imposing at all. I'm like, really? Just not even have him in the scene?
Well, we got a great introduction to the mountain this season.
Yes, they did a great job with that.
Here, I'm just killing a bunch of people just for fun. Practice. That was great, man. Well,
and I don't really know what happened, but I've read the books like we mentioned, but I must have blocked out Oberyn's death because I had no recollection. So I was totally shocked. I was shocked. I did not expect it at all. And not that I don't think I saw much of it because I turned my head. That was awful. But
well, and I felt like because I did, I was like, yeah, okay, he's going to win. He's going to win. And like I've used this metaphor before, but like Charlie Brown going to kick the football unless he pulls it away. But in this case, it was kind of a good feeling because with George R. R. Martin, he's so good at keeping one step ahead and being unpredictable. And I'm like, this is great. I like that. I don't want him to ever get predictable. I value unpredictability, even if it can be tragic.
But you know what, though? I got to tell you, after that scene, I stomped back into the bedroom and I told David, that's it. I'm
done
off
with
the
show. So, okay. So how many of you have we all seen The Princess Bride?
Yeah.
How Inigo Montoya was he? At this point where he's already got the mountain in the chest. It's over with. And you killed my sister. You will have atoned for the... You know, he starts going
on. Prepare
to die. And I'm just like, oh my God, no, you're Inigo Montoying the thing. Stop. And just get the guy in the head, you know? No.
Except Inigo Montoya actually prevails.
He does.
But dude, honestly, any show that can bring about that strong of a reaction is a pretty great show.
Right.
If it can make you care that much, they're doing something right.
Yeah. I want to hear that you threw your beer at the TV.
Then I'll be impressed. No, I would never waste it.
But they said they got a nice new TV.
Nobody better like be throwing any beers at our TV.
We love our TV, and it's a family member.
That's really sad.
Welcome to my sad world.
You have Posey.
Your turn, Karen.
Okay. So we'll have a palate cleanser here, which is Daenerys. And let me tell you, it ain't ruling. It ain't easy ruling or being the mother of dragons. So conquering is easy, as it turns out, at least if you have dragons and righteousness on your side. But ruling is harder. Politics is tricky. She had the wise Jorah Mormont to counsel her until she found out that he was a snitch. And then she kicked him off the island.
Which was sad.
Which was really incredibly sad. So ruling is rough.
He obviously loved her.
And then also having the villagers come in and saying, you know, hey, your dragon barbecued my kid. That's bad too. And then also dragons. I mean, you guys think raising teenagers is tricky? Just try raising dragons. It's always it's always sorry about your kids being barbecued by my dragon. He is a rebel. Love the scene where she's sitting on a rock and one of her dragons gets all up in her face. Remember that scene?
That was a great scene. And I think she tried to futz with this food, right?
Yeah.
She tried to pet him while he was eating or something.
Never do that, man.
It was kind of sad, the whole thing about her having to deal with the day-to-day realities. I liked it, but it was a bit of a drag too. Oh my gosh.
The saddest part is when, you know, she realizes it's not easy to discipline naughty dragons, and so she locks the other two up, and that was the saddest thing. I practically cried.
You can't do that with teenagers. Yeah.
It was a good plan.
You think about it, though.
Good plan to start with some smaller cities. Although it's like, dude, Jesus, she's never going to get anywhere. You know, I've been waiting for her to meet somebody else on this show for a long time. But it was a good plan to, she's like, let me see what it's like to rule, you know. I think she's trying to train herself, right?
Yeah. Well, she's coming up against the problem of idealism versus reality.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's going about it in a very idealistic way. And now reality is pretty much kicking her in the ass and going, hey, look at me. And
it's like, this is going to be I don't know, hopefully not inflammatory, but this ISIS group in Iraq.
Yeah.
They have to do public services and stuff now because they violently took over and now they have to deal with the day-to-day realities.
It do we have any listeners in Iraq?
Seems so funny. I don't think so. No.
We do.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
I haven't checked.
Military?
Probably.
Yeah. Maybe sure. We do. If we do, I'm sorry.
Hello, and I'll Iraq. And Eid Mubarak.
So where are we? Are you
happy? Eid.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay, David.
So focusing in just a little bit more, we've already talked about Oberyn and the Red Viper, but I liked particularly the scene between the Red Viper and Tyrion in the dungeon.
Mm, yeah.
I thought that was one of the best scenes in the entire show so far. Just riveting, and all of a sudden you get to learn what this guy is all about. And it looks like Tyrion's done for, and all of a sudden he has a hero, and this guy has purpose, and he's confident. We all know it didn't turn out well, but I just thought that was an amazing scene, an amazing force of personality, and a great revelation about both of their characters.
I'm so glad they included the story, the childhood story of them meeting him for the first time.
That was a great scene.
They did such a good job of it.
We watched it twice.
Yeah.
I mean, when he talks about, you know, he understands who Tyrion is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets that. He conveys that to, you know, here's what I know about you, and here's why your sister is like this.
Yeah, and Tyrion says, you're in the wrong place for justice. And he says, I'm in exactly the right place. I want to kill Lannisters, and they're all right here.
I cried. It was awesome. So great.
I thought I was going to see a monster, but it's just a baby with a slightly larger head and shorter limbs. But it's a baby.
A little tiny pink cock.
Yeah, that's right. A little tiny pink cock. Yeah.
Loved all the, or this is might be jumping the gun a little, but with Jaime and Tyrion down there, I just loved seeing that. It wasn't all good, but a lot of brotherly love going on.
Yeah. Okay, so that scene in particular, the cousin Orson and crushing the Beatles and all that, I understand that was a major dig at Orson Scott Card. Crushing bugs, the whole thing with Ender's Game and all that.
Because George R. R. Martin doesn't like him or something?
Yeah. Mm. Orson Scott Card has said a lot of a lot of homophobic things and the whole... So that whole
scene
was largely a dig at Orson Scott Card.
I did not like that scene for the simple reason that it went on for a long time.
It was long.
And I thought cheated that episode out of a longer battle between the Viper and the Mountain, which was relatively short.
Yep.
Fair enough.
My two cents.
Mr. Block?
Well, alrighty. My number two. Now, this is a TV show that I would honestly watch. If they made a sitcom out of Arya and the Hound,
right?
I would watch that. That would be some of the greatest TV imaginable.
Knock on my door.
Those two together.
Gonna kill you. Come and fall on my sword.
Those two together were such an amazing pairing from the beginning to the end. I mean, going back to season 3 with them arriving right before the Red Wedding and him knocking her out to make sure she didn't get her ass killed. Into season 4 where we get the entire thing with the fight in the inn where she gets Needle back and then eventually Biter and Rorge where she learns about, you know, this is where the heart is. Okay. Every little step along the way where the Hound was almost teaching Arya how to be a ruthless killer. And Arya was in many ways teaching the Hound how to be something less than just a complete prick. And in the end, the two of them had this beautiful understanding with one another that really culminated when they arrived at the Bloody Gates leading up to the Eyrie, where she finds out about the death of her Aunt Lysa. And all she can do is muster that laugh that says, fuck life. This is just ridiculous. You know, just that amazing laugh.
She's
she
had
lets
all
out.
These moments, that one, and she doesn't keep walking a few feet and find that her sister's actually there.
Yeah.
The one where
they're so close.
She almost gets to see her mother before her mother dies. Mm-hmm. And what else? I don't know. It seems like there's been a few.
Well, and then the two tragedy. Of them, once it does culminate in the fight with the Hound and Brienne and the way that the Hound is at that point saying, no, you're not going to take her. You're just a Lannister shill. I'm protecting her. And that Arya, I don't know quite how to make out that whole last scene between her and the Hound as to whether or not, killing him would have been merciful? Did she not want to give him mercy, or did she simply not want to be the one to kill him because she grew so very fond of him?
I think that she didn't like him at all. She made a point to tell him that he was on her list of people to kill.
Yeah.
And there was no understanding between them, and she detested him, and she detested him so much that she didn't even live up to her promise to kill him when he was begging for it, and she let him suffer because she's not an honorable person. And I'm actually getting kind of tired of her attitude, although she's been through a lot of suffering, so I can't begrudge her from turning into a cold, heartless person. I know it's not what you say, funny. Yeah, that's what I felt during that. I was like, come on, help him out, the poor guy.
Well, I felt that she still had to get her revenge, and she could not get that if she put him out of his misery quickly like that.
Yeah.
No, and
yeah,
I don't, the butcher boy.
Yeah.
I don't agree that she felt nothing for him at any time. Yeah, I don't agree with that either. But I agree with you at bottom, when she first met him, he killed her innocent friend. Yeah. And you're never going to get past that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, she
even though
really
maybe she had some bonding with him in the end, she got revenge.
And he really was the first one on her list.
I could see that too, but it wasn't clear because she just had this stone face. I'm going to kill the whole time, you know? And she saw him do things that she didn't like kill that farmer guy.
Yeah.
And he was sort of holding her against her will the whole time, right?
Maybe. There were many moments where she could have walked away.
She could have left with Bran.
Now, there are many moments where she could have killed him and many moments where she could have walked.
And she doesn't know Bran.
It's a good point.
Yeah. You're not going to trust.
No, she has no clue.
But I do feel there was an understanding. I just don't think it was enough of an understanding for her not to get her revenge.
Hmm. Okay. Where are we now? Your turn?
Gracie.
Okay. My number two is Ygritte's death. And I knew this was coming, but it was still really, really impactful. Ygritte was stubborn and even sometimes annoying, I have to say, but they gave her such a great death. She went out so well, and, you know, I just couldn't help but love her, even though she was who she was. And, you know, just seeing John, you know, hold her in the last moments and them connecting and, you know, you remember the cave, you know, we should have stayed in that cave because they really, truly did love each other. And it was heartbreaking for me. And I was not in tears, but I was very, very close to tears. And I was just glad that she got such a perfect death because I think she is a very important part of John's character. And I also, some of the scenes after her death I really liked were the ones between John and Tormund Giantsbane. And when, you know, Tormund was asking John if he loved her, and he said, because she loved you. And John's like, you know, did she say that? And Tormund's like, no, she just kept talking about how much she wanted to kill you. And that's how I knew. And I thought that was great, that moment between the two of them, because they both loved Ygritte, you know, in their own way. And I love that she got her proper northern burial, free folk burial.
That's how I express my love for you.
Well, their whole relationship did seem like that playground kind of love where you hit each other, except they were firing arrows, you know? Yeah. It did seem like that because you could tell they really wanted to be together, but they were, especially her, she was so mad at him for
because she wasn't enough to turn him, really. Yeah.
But she still wanted him.
Jon Snow invented the Lard's kiss, and she loved that.
And it was great that it was that one character who was kind of meek and scared, and you kind of wanted to see him prevail in some way, right? And then he's the one that ended up killing her, and you're like, oh, not like that.
Oh, Ollie.
I guess so.
Well, little Ollie, I mean, he deserved that kill, too, because she was the one that killed his parents.
Oh,
so
I didn't realize
that. Was his own revenge.
So many connections, and I don't
know. That was even the kid that the Magnar Thenn, the bald guy, when he told the kid, I'm going to eat your parents, that's the same kid.
And he sent them. He killed their parents.
So he had righteous reason to kill some wildlings. You know, he had no issue with
that. And especially her. He was watching her the whole time. Mm-hmm. And one last thing about Ygritte is that as much as I got tired of hearing it, I was very glad that she got to, one more time, you know nothing, Jon Snow.
Say it with the accent.
I can't do that. Eric, Mr. Blog can talk about it.
I thought it was a little bit like a tagline, though.
It is a bit of a tagline. It
was.
But it's
and
her
I
tagline.
Was tired of it, but I just liked one hearing it that time. One last time.
If she couldn't quite get it out, you know.
At least you knew you'd never have to hear it again. So.
Or it could have been a better, like a death rattle. You know.
Excuse me.
I mean nothing.
For my number two, I picked this controversial scene of Jaime forcing himself on Cersei. Because it was a huge moment, and it may have been an area in the show that was a misstep, one of very few. I can't even think of any other ones, but there was an article in AV Club about it called Rape of Thrones. And was very upset. But the thing is, in the book, during this scene, it's the first time Jaime has seen her since he went through his whole ordeal. And she's resistant, but she's excited about it, and she's willing. And here, I'm going to read the passage from the book. It says, he knocked the candles aside and lifted her up onto the mother's altar, pushing up her skirts and the silken shift beneath. She pounded on his chest with feeble fists, murmuring about the risk, the danger, about her father, about the septons, and about the wrath of gods. He never heard her. He undid his breeches and climbed up and blah, blah, blah. One hand slid up the thigh, blah, blah, blah.
Hot.
Then, but it slower, made no baby, difference. Slower. Hurry, she was whispering now. Quickly, quickly, now, do it, now. Do me now, Jaime, Jaime, Jaime. Her hands helped guide him. Yes, Cersei said. So it's like obvious that she became into it. My brother, sweet brother, yes, like that, yes. So sick. in the show, to me, it seemed like she was fighting it the whole time. And not at all into it.
It played very, very differently from how it played in the book. The only reason why she was stopping him in the book was because they're
where
in the sept.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that Joffrey was already dead and on a slab. They basically fucked next to their dead son.
Yeah, they
so there were some issues there that were some massive wrongness.
But in this
rape
one,
was not one of them.
She had already turned him down when he professed his love a couple episodes earlier or something. So I came in with the feeling that she doesn't want to be with him. She's already said that. And now he's forcing himself on her. She doesn't
and
look
no
happy
means
about
no.
it. No means no. But strangely enough, the actors and the director didn't see it that way when they were like surprised that people saw it that way. Huh. Even to her. She said, oh, yeah, she was turned on by it. And I should have gotten a quote from
maybe
her.
Maybe they cut those
and then
scenes out.
Later, yeah, maybe. And then later, I was thinking that too. Maybe it was bad editing.
Right.
But she welcomed him as a lover. I think she even initiated it, right? So it was like, really, it was supposed to have played like it more like it did in the book.
Yeah.
And to me, that's an error.
In the show, she does say, this isn't right, which kind of leads you to believe that it should have been more like the book. But it didn't, like you say, it did not play out like that.
And I would have expected her to have a grudge against him, but it was like it never happened after that. On
well,
the show.
No, because then she calls him later, the next time she sees him, she calls him Captain of the Guard instead of Jaime.
What really frustrated me with that was that Jaime's arc was really headed toward this lovely redemptive sort of thing.
Yes.
And that, I felt, set it back a
but
great deal.
Game of Thrones does that kind of thing. I felt the same way, but I also was sort of like, well, they can never have anyone be too pure.
Well, see, the thing with Jaime, for the longest time, whenever I tell anybody, like, no, Jaime's one of my favorite characters in the entire series, they'd look at me like I'm a freaking monster when I'd say that. Like, oh my God, that guy's terrible. I'm like, no, 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 just wait, you know? Having this happen brought it back to like, I guess I look like a monster now because I'm saying this rapist is a great guy. You know?
started off by pushing Bran out the window.
Exactly.
But
that's the thing. His sister. Exactly.
See his transformation and the whole ordeal that he goes through
with
and
Brienne.
His bonding with Brienne, that you think, oh, maybe he's changed. And it still seems like that's what they're going for because he has had some heroic moments with Tyrion and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like that one scene is a blight on all of that. But George R. R. Martin, he talks about sexual violence in the series and says rape and sexual violence have been a part of every war ever fought, and to omit them from the narrative centered on war and power would have been fundamentally false and dishonest. So that's okay. I mean, to me, that it's okay to show some like horrible rape scenes that you would never want to see happen in real life. But this one didn't quite make sense. But he also said about this particular scene, if the show had retained some of Cersei's dialogue from the books, it might have left a somewhat different impression. But that dialogue was very much shaped by the circumstances of the books, delivered by a woman who is seeing her lover again for the first time after a long while apart, during which she feared he was dead. I'm not sure if it would have worked in the new timeline, blah, blah, blah. But then at the end it says, I do regret if it has disturbed people. Oh, the scene was always intended to be disturbing, but I do regret if it has disturbed people for the wrong reasons. So I think that's sort of a tacit admission that maybe it, you know, they kind of misstepped there.
Well, I think that the disturbing part was supposed to be incest in a church next to your dead son.
Yeah. Yes.
That's,
but then you put rape on top of it. It's like, well, that's,
it doesn't make sense with the story.
That's horrible.
Either.
You know,
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
I feel dirty now.
I gotta take a shower.
I'm gonna take a shower. Yeah.
Have a drink.
All right. So now we're at number one. So I'm going to go ahead and say my number one, which is, I mean, this number one had me cheering loudly and practically jumping up out of my chair.
Dario's fine top booty.
It was a fine top booty. I think we've established Dario's fine top booty. This is, dun, 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 Joffrey dies.
Yay.
Yeah, it's the episode, which is The Lion and the Rose. And really, I enjoyed the whole purple wedding sequence. It was, I thought.
You didn't want to quit the show after that?
I wanted to keep watching. I'm like, let's keep looking at
Bring it back to life
Joffrey.
And kill him again.
Oh, it came at the end of the episode. And they took their time with the whole wedding, which was wonderful. So they really built the tension with Joffrey humiliating Tyrion one more time and just reiterating why he's such a monster. And the entertainment, remember that with the dwarves representing the fallen would-be kings.
And he's laughing his ass off.
It really, it took hating Joffrey to the next level.
Oh,
and
it
then
did.
Joffrey drinks the wine and turns purple and dies. I had both arms up cheering like a lunatic at the end. It was unbelievable.
Did you see all the dead pigeons in the pie when he sliced it, that there was some that just sliced through? No, they did that. They did that scene so very well. I mean, there were some tweaks from the source material. However, fuck the source material. It was great.
The entire
was just
wedding.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So do you know the details? Because I know that the poison was in one of the beads on Sansa's necklace that was given to her by that
Lady Olenna.
The guy.
You're right. Captain America. God, what was his name? He was wearing the Captain America armor. I'm blanking out
Dantos,
his name.
Sir Dantos?
Dantos. Yeah. Sir Dantos. Yes,
and
exactly.
That was all part of Littlefinger's plan.
Yes.
But I read somewhere that if you watch that scene closely, you can see, for one thing, that a lot of different people are touching Joffrey's glass, but maybe you can see how it happened? I don't know.
Lady Olenna removes that particular jewel off of the necklace. In the book,
how does she do that?
You remember she's fondling her hair.
You see her remove it. You can see her remove it. And during the wedding, you can in fact see her slipping something into the drink if you look closely.
Okay.
And Marjorie kind of blocks it, or something happens, but she does that. It gets passed. The thing with the chalice when he's drinking out of that, and this is the beauty of the show. Did a great job of representing this. That chalice passed through almost everybody's hand.
Yes.
That could be guilty.
Right.
Right.
So you really are left.
Turns it into a
whodunit. I'm just a little disappointed that they kind of came out with what happened as early as they did.
I was happy. Because when you don't know, you want to find out.
Yeah.
But it was.
It could have been a lot of different people.
It could have been a lot of different people.
I was guessing a lot of different people.
Who are you guessing?
It could have been any of them. I knew that it wasn't going to be Tyrion.
Well, I mean, Sir Loras, he walks out. He got so pissed off about the whole thing because when they started making fun of Renly being gay, he got so pissed and he walks out.
Everybody
Joffrey is one of those people that everybody had a motive.
Right. It's a great little whodunit.
I actually thought it was Tywin because I thought that Joffrey.
He was my third guess.
I thought that Joffrey was getting so unwieldy that Tywin was like,
let's get Tomlin in there.
That little annoying aphid has got to go.
My first choice was Marjorie because she's so cunning, but she just seems so sweet and also compassionate. And I'm like, does she have this like evil side that matches her cunning? But my second choice was actually Olenna. And then my third choice was Tywin, but I didn't suspect.
There was only one person I would say who was not suspect, and that is Cersei.
Tyrion.
No, Cersei was the only person who was not suspect.
That's true,
everybody else was suspect as far as I was concerned.
And Joffrey.
Fair enough. I'm done with you
well,
people.
Well, maybe he had a self-loathing side we never knew about.
Yeah, you didn't laugh at my pie jokes.
So I was very happy to see him go, and also like, oh, no more of his ridiculous.
And I've got to say, you think keeping the Red Wedding quiet was difficult for book readers? Keeping this quiet from book was very, very difficult.
Was it hard, honey?
Yeah.
Especially because everybody's saying, I just want Joffrey to die. He's such an asshole. I can't wait for him
to
die.
See, I wasn't saying that. Mm-hmm. One of my great pleasures of watching the show up till now, especially after he became king, is just wincing at how cruel, ridiculously cruel he can be. It kind of reminds me of watching George Costanza on Seinfeld or something like that, you know, these petty, ridiculous people. But in the end, I'm glad. It was very satisfying.
It really, really was. I mean, really leaping out of your seats, yelling, yeah! Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting then to see Tomlin, who I didn't even notice before, how gentle he seemed. And I'm like, okay, this guy is basically a non-entity.
Well, who maybe could grow to be a good guy. This is the second Tommen in the series.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, much like the second Dario, the third.
And I think they did that because they wanted to have that seduction scene in the other Tomlin that would have just seemed ridiculous.
It was too young.
Yeah.
Well, I like him, though. He looks so much like Joffrey, like a sweet Joffrey.
Yeah. And Sir Pounce. We got to meet Sir Pounce.
Kitty Sir Pounce.
And there are two other kitties as well in the books, but we're not going to meet them. And I understand Sir Pounce will not be coming back.
Oh.
I know. Yeah, I know.
He did such a good job.
Spoiler alert.
I also was going to bring that up, that many of the other shows that we love, Breaking Bad, Lost, what have you, there's not so many changes of actors.
Yeah.
That's unusual to me in this show that all of a sudden, hey, this is... They used to do that on soap operas all
the time. Well, the cast is so large. Lost,
Bewitched.
You had like a group of six main characters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, David, your turn.
Okay, my number one is an episode that I think not everybody I talked to loved, but I actually really did, which was the Battle for the Wall itself, which is pretty much one self-contained episode.
People didn't love that?
Yeah, I heard a lot of complaints that it didn't have depth or something.
The whole episode. It was the only episode I think they've done that was only one story.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Which was amazing to have that be a battle.
It had giants. It had mammoths.
Yeah.
And mammoths.
Yes.
I thought they did a great job with
amazing.
It. It was dramatic.
The best battle ever.
Action-packed and amazing looking. The mammoths were incredible. The giant, that whole storyline.
I love how
incredible.
They dressed the giants. With the layered rags.
Yeah, and then they had the wildlings were climbing the wall, and then they had the giant scythe that came out.
It was incredible.
And it had the single best single take shot panning across Castle Black on a set that they had never built for Castle Black before. They had to expand the entire set for this one episode so you can get the whole panoply of the battle going on in that one single shot. It was just brilliantly edited. It was amazing.
Yeah, and they did
so
did a great job of kind of giving you the underdog sense that, like, boy, we're really not in great shape here. Like, it was an upset even that they lasted through the night with the
and they gave it all they had and managed to stab it off, but you felt like, well, the next day they're going to be fucked.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Battle of Mag the Mighty and Gren and his guys going at it there in the tunnel. And the fact that Gren dies and Pip dies and Sam actually finally curses. And I mean, there were so many great things in that
episode.
And he kisses Ginny. Yeah!
And this sort of feeling of tragedy that Alistair Thorne says, yeah, you're probably right. We should have blocked up the tunnel. You're like,
that was awesome. Yeah.
Snow told you.
Validation
what
from
was
Alistair
your
Thorne.
Favorite part of it?
I think my favorite single moment was the scythe that came across where you're just like, whoa.
Mine was the giant getting into the hall.
Yeah, that was great.
And I just got this creature from
Mag
another
the Mighty.
Time and legend is caught in this little rat hole. And
well, I love
you get
Janos,
the sense of history and of ancient.
And Janos Slint is up
and then they
saying,
mentioned
giants
him.
Are real.
And they mentioned him, one of the wildlings, I think in the next episode, was like he was a prince or something.
Mag
like
the Mighty was the king of giants.
Oh.
Johnson.
Farmer's Boy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, I freaking love that episode. You like battles, huh?
I do. I mean, if it's done well and dramatic and what have you, it's not all I love about the show. I think all the intrigue is fascinating and really everything about
the show. Well, they usually cock up most of the battle scenes in the show. Quite frankly, that's the worst part of the show generally are the battle scenes.
It can be.
Well, they don't show them.
What about the harbor?
Yeah, Blackwater? No, that was cocked up as well. I mean, there
parts of it were good.
It was a good episode. There were good parts to it, but it should have been much more.
And then on the battlefield, they didn't like with Tyrion in season 1.
He gets knocked out.
Yeah, just that's
he gets knocked out. Well, Stannis, there's like 5 guys going up the fighting. They've never gone this large, and that's all for budgetary reasons. And I get it, and there are logistical reasons why that.
But then you wonder, well, how did they do this? Now that we know you can do that,
the practical realities are that the show has now, I think, been so successful that they have the resources.
And in that battle, you got, as Grace mentioned, you got the death of Ygritte. You got the whole thing with she and Jon Snow. You got little Ollie killing her. There were so many different little elements to that entire battle. That was just phenomenal. Man, I loved it. It was a great episode.
I wish Walking Dead had the same budget as...
And it wasn't the best episode of the
Game
season.
Of Thrones.
It was the first time episode 9 was not the best episode of the season.
It was the best battle.
But it was the best battle, by far. Yeah.
Right on.
Well, all right. My number one, we've already talked about, was the Viper, Oberyn Martell. Yeah. I loved him from the moment we met him. What is his name? Is it Pedro Pascal?
Or
Pablo Pascal? I can't remember. But one of the Pascal, Mr. Pascal, was just phenomenal in this role. And, you meet him. And as Jason, as you mentioned before, he comes off as very cocky. There's maybe something a little off-putting about it. But then you realize this guy is just all about justice. He's fair. He's decent. So my number one, the Viper, Oberyn Martell. And one thing we didn't mention that they did not make a big point of in the show until I believe episode 10, when the Mountain was finally dying, and you see it right before the battle between the Viper and the Mountain. You see his squire coating his blade with something. It's poison. And they mention of it earlier on in the show that that the Viper is all about the Red Viper. He's all about poison. He knows poison. He always coats his blades with poison.
So does the Mountain die?
I'm not going to say that.
He's not dead yet.
Is this another one of those situations where we didn't actually see him die, so he may or may not be dead?
Don't ask those kind of questions.
But really, I'm not supposed to ask spoilers.
Yes, I can vaguely say yes. It is one of those situations where we don't know
the answers.
They don't know.
Yeah, but they can give clues. Yeah, they do know. They've both read the books,
Just look it up on Wikipedia, cheater.
I mean, it is the one show where I've thought about this a lot. Every other show or movie that's based on a book, they can kind of take it anywhere they want. Yeah. But this one is so complicated that you really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, if they start pulling on threads, it's the whole thing will unravel.
And because they've done so well keeping so close to the books, I don't want them to change that. I want them to keep doing what they're doing. Except now I want them to stagger the storylines rather than doing certain characters.
Well, we're in a weird position right now because we are in a number of different storylines caught up to the books. There were a lot of elements from book 5 specifically.
Or even stuff that's not in the books at all, which I'm going to talk
about. That was one thing as well.
But I really want to stress that when we do our Game of Thrones podcast, we're going to try really hard not to give anything away. Because I don't want people to be afraid to listen and think that they're going to get spoiled.
There will be no spoilers. We should talk about the TV show. That's it.
Unless we have a segment about the books, we want to do that. But it'll be very well delineated. Okay, where are we?
Gracie.
Okay, my number one is Tyrion, and specifically the trial and the dungeon scenes, which David has touched on a bit. But I think this season, almost every time I get choked up were those touching scenes when people would come in and talk to him. And one that really touched me was when Bronn came in, because when Tyrion realized that Bronn wasn't able to fight for him, it was just, he was at such a low. And even more so when his brother left. I mean, he couldn't even let go of Bronn's hand. It was just heart-wrenching. And just all of those scenes in the dungeon, and also the trial when he he just lashed out and said everything that was on his mind. Mm-hmm. He wasn't his typical little snarky mm-hmm. self. He just all that
pure rage.
The rage mm-hmm. from not being recognized for saving the city, and everything came out all at once.
And he was betrayed by the woman he loved.
Yes.
Really betrayed.
Well, we weren't. Yeah. Yeah. That was horrible.
Yeah. And I wonder how, I mean, he did such a good job. Dinklage.
Yes. Peter Dinklage.
If he was calling forth some real rage that he's got or something, I don't know, but he did a great job.
He did a wonderful job. And Tyrion's been my favorite since season one.
Mine too.
So just to see him shine was just, you know, magnificent. Yeah. I loved it.
The scene with Bronn was a great scene.
It
really was.
And it really set up the whole later, how that fight was going to play out. But it set off everything that had happened between their mm-hmm. two characters.
What I really enjoyed about that scene was it was extraordinarily true to both characters. Mm-hmm. Very true to Bronn, very true to Tyrion. And I love that. Though Tyrion accepted what Bronn had to say. He's like, you're right. I can't argue that. You know, it was great.
I'm so disappointed in Shay because up until then, she seemed like a good person. And I know she was upset that he let her go, but he really was. At least you think maybe it could have been in part for her own good, you know, to protect her, to send her away. Because if people found out that he was with her, then she was going to be in trouble. She was going to be in danger. And right.
Yes.
So, but she just turned from being what seemed like a good person into not only betraying him, but then ending up in Tywin's bed. Mm-hmm. That was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and what was so horrible was also is that she referred to Tywin as her Lion of Lannister, you know, which is exactly what she referred to Tyrion as well.
Which you was wonder just how much of
heartbreaking.
It was
yeah. Exactly. And it was.
Well, but I don't know. I think when Tyrion said, you know, you're a whore.
Yeah.
I think, you know, she's kind of that affected her. And she's like, I am a whore. And so she started
acting like
that. And hating him and trying hating him. Even thinking, how am I going to get back at him? He broke my heart.
But also,
but thinking a whore and what is good for me? What,
right.
You know, and I can't really.
And but also, like, well, whores, they just fake it and they're not.
Yeah.
But remembering that a character like hers also does not have control over her own fate. She was in danger. So she was doing what would save her life once she was discovered.
Right.
Mistakes on this show are paid back bitterly. You make a mistake, you often will pay for it with your life. And her mistake was she didn't listen to Tyrion and get while the getting was good. And once she didn't, and she was discovered, now she was doing kind of what she had to do to stay alive.
Now, I'm not 100% sure, but do we get the story of Taisha in the show? His previous wife? No?
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought we did earlier on. In a previous season.
Yes.
The fact that
like
he
the
was.
First season,
he tells
maybe.
Her, right?
Yeah, that he was married to somebody, and then Tywin and Jaime basically said, oh, by the way, she was a whore that we hired, and then they had all the Kingsguard screw his wife, and then Tyrion would screw her at the very end and then give a gold coin, a gold dragon, and say, well, that's because I'm a Lannister. So there is already a history of this sort of thing.
Betrayal and deceit.
And I really don't remember. Has Jaime said?
I don't know about that part. So.
Okay, I'm not sure about that either, so I'm going to leave that out. But it's there is this history, and Tywin does have an issue with Tyrion and whores.
Yes.
And it is extra shocking when you see Tywin in bed with said whore.
Yes.
If there's any whores out there, we don't mean to.
Sorry.
Offend.
We love you.
Okay.
Okay.
My turn. What? You don't love whores? No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I appreciate them, but I don't necessarily love them.
Listeners, pal.
Look, I love them for an hour, okay? What can I tell you?
Okay. This is okay because we're talking about Game of Thrones. So my number one is the scene with this new kind of White Walker. Which I thought was amazing and I loved it. And it made me theorize about a lot of different things. First of all, like the whole arrangement. I mean, I guess Craster figures out that if he gives up babies to the White Walkers, then they'll leave him alone, which I thought was interesting because it's similar to how he figures out if he lets the Night Watchmen use his place as an outpost, then they'll leave him alone too. So he's just that kind of guy. But how did he figure that out, for one thing? Let's try leaving a baby out and see if that keeps him off the
Maybe the White Walkers were spookily pointed.
Yeah.
At, okay. Well, and, all right.
But it was awesome to see the Walker take the baby to this, like, circle of ice spikes with this ice podium and set the baby down. And then this new one that has these kind of pointy, like, thorns, like it looks almost like a crown built into his head, and he touches it and it stops crying and its eyes turn blue. And I figure that means that that's how they procreate. This is how White Walkers are born. You need either this guy's the king, or he's part of a ruling class or a special class that can, and probably are the only ones that can turn them. And they want babies for some reason.
He's building his army.
They're delicious.
Yeah, he's building an army. And it makes me think that, or wonder if this winter that's supposedly coming is going to take another 18 years until this kid's grown up. But,
baby warrior.
Yeah. But, anyways, I love the White Walkers because
they're like zombies.
Yeah, they're kind of, well, they create zombies, but they're just cool and.
Literally.
Yeah, they're very cold. They're very cold. And I like that they show them not much, but the show is so rich that I don't need to see more of them. And that's even better because it keeps them mysterious and menacing. And
it was great that scene gives you the clue that, because first there's the animated whites and then you meet the White Walkers, but you are thinking of them as zombies, which are sort of mindless. And then
the whites are,
that thing is going on. You're like, wow, they're not mindless at all. There's an intelligence going on here.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that and I'm like, do they like go to the bathroom? Do they like have to go buy milk or whatever? I'm hoping that
they probably don't buy milk,
that they're all sort of, unified and like the Borg, you know, I don't want them to have the same kind of like inner squabbles that humans have.
They have like
a one mind kind of.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily one mind, but all on the same page.
You mean like Cylons turned into a bunch of squabbling humans?
Yeah, yeah. I don't.
You
I want
said
these
you'd
guys
watch
to
the white baby. But it's my night to go out.
United in their purpose. And their purpose is to assimilate. You know, they are like the Borg. They want to assimilate. And, but speaking of intelligence, I was looking up information about them. Apparently, their language is called Scroth in the book. And the credits of season one of the TV series include the statement, Dothraki, Ashai, and Scroth languages created by the Language Creation of Society and David J. Peterson.
Yeah.
That dude is awesome, by the way. David J. Peterson actually created both low and high Valyrian.
Right. There's whole languages. That guy's awesome. So cool.
The thing is, though, he developed a spoken language to use in season one, but they didn't end up using it. And now David Benioff and D.B. Weiss say that Scroth is the official name of the language, but it's the ice cracking chatter that you hear now. And that was created by sound designer Peter Brown. So I guess they go, and that's how they talk to each other.
Awesome. That's great. They were so badass.
And I would guess that eventually we'll see a lot of fighting among the White Walkers and the people of Westeros.
I hope so.
And I wonder if they will just defeat them and take over the world. And the last scene will be that little baby sitting on the Iron Throne.
Was it the last shot of a previous season where they were advancing with the zombie horses?
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to say.
That was awesome.
The zombie horses are great. Yeah.
But it's like, well, what happened to that? Where'd they go?
They stole some babies and then went back to that.
They wiped out all the Night's Watch at the Fist of the First Hand, I believe is where that there was a whole
Fist
scene
the first
that happened
men.
There.
Yeah.
First Men, thank you.
And now they're sort of still building up their forces.
But it is an interesting question. Like if they awaken when a winter comes.
Yeah.
And when it's really cold up in the north, okay, the rest of Westeros, it's going to be winter for a while, but then it's going to be summer again at some point.
So if you like,
or does their conquest actually change the seasons? And
it's permanent. Because they can freeze people. So maybe they have.
So if you just get like a whole army of heat lamps.
Don't you think like the winter is more metaphorical and it's the winter is about the magic resurfacing more than the actual season?
No, well, no. You know, the whole
nobody
thing,
can see the nod, David.
David's not.
Because winter.
Wait,
there
is
was,
this radio?
There was
no,
a
I agree
winter.
With that. That, I think that is probably. Part
but
of
they've
it.
Talked about how there was a 10-year winter in the past, right? Literally.
They've talked about how the length of the seasons varies.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing about winter's coming, I've thought about that too. And I think it's become kind of a saying in Westeros just to say, be prepared for the worst. Always be prepared. It's not like literally. This change of season is going to come.
I did love it when Catelyn was talking in a previous season about Renly and Loras and all these guys. And she's like, they're the Knights of Summer and winter is coming.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to have the toughness for what's coming.
I really think that at some point Westeros is going to get cold, all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope not. So. I hope not, because I'll have to put on more clothes and we won't get to see cute booty.
The book six title is The Winds of Winter, I believe.
Yeah.
And the book six is something of spring, a hope of spring or a sign of spring. I don't recall exactly right now, but... Yeah, there's winter coming. Winter is coming. I mean, Ned said it. You know, let's face it. That's the Stark sigil.
So. It is.
I barely even remember who Ned was.
Ned who? Ned. Who's Ned?
All right. Anybody else want to say anything about the season? I forgot to ask in the beginning what our general thoughts were, but it seems like we all loved it, right?
Oh my
definitely,
God! Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I try. I mean, I can't rank these seasons because to me they're all about the same quality. Yeah. They're all just great.
I give it 5 out of 5 tight booties.
But I mean, in order, like if you had to rank,
now, two icy white thumbs up.
Nice. Now I gotta say that Daria booty, that was a booty double, by the way.
A booty double.
It was a booty double. No, I'm not kidding.
I think you know entirely too much about it.
There's a lot of
booty.
Can
do a whole episode.
Yeah, you got there.
Look, that you know, you there. Okay, we didn't even talk about that scene in particular, but I'm going to go ahead and say the look on Danny's face said everything you need to know about what's going on with Daria. Daria is a great character, and part of the reason why I love Daria as much as I do, not because of his fine top booty, but in the books, he's basically like Jack Sparrow. I mean, he's got a beard that's like tri-forked and is dyed purple, and he's got a gold tooth, and it's just ridiculous. And he's got the hilts of his swords or ladies, which they at least did show you that in this season, that before he throws the
naked
knife.
Naked ladies?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Before he throws the knife into the horse's head to stop the champion there of Marine.
Great.
He fondles them. He's like tweaking with their little nipples there, and then he, foomp, you know.
By the way,
Dario's a great
I'm
character.
I'm all about the actor change with Dario.
No, the new Dario is fantastic.
Was not
he's not
a
Fabio
fan.
Dario.
Yeah,
now
he looked
Dario.
Too ridiculous, he did. The other guy. Jenny complained. She liked
Grey
him
Worm
better.
This season has been phenomenal.
Because she thinks the new one's too generic and the other guy was...
The other one was too non-sexy.
Yeah.
And now, look, like, we've got Missandei and Grey Worm, some little romance going there, which I don't know how that's going to work with Mr. Pillar and Stone's gone.
Maybe he can learn some of John's tricks.
Maybe.
You don't the need the Pillar and Stones all the time.
No, the Lard's Kiss, it'll work. But
I'm not going to go any further than that.
I will.
A woman would say that.
No, but there were so many great things this season. We barely touched on everything. I mean, you know,
it's important, but not all the time. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Okay, that's a good point to end it on. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Walker. All right, we're back, and it's time for news about Game of Thrones. There's, you know, we've been doing these first four episodes like one a day, so there wasn't much. But I found this great article on Guardian.com. The headline was, Can Marxist Theory Predict the End of Game of Thrones? The basic premise was that fantasy worlds often resemble the days of feudalism in Europe.
Okay.
And there's kings and fiefdoms, and there's always a crisis of the system with the looming threat of decline. And
in this case with Game of Thrones, since it's been revealed that the Lannister gold mines haven't been producing anything in years and they're severely in debt to the Iron Bank. Well, at the end of feudalism, quote, debts accumulated under a corrupt patronage system whose sources of wealth dried up destroyed the system in the end. And then when kings found themselves in debt to bankers, at first they tried to sort it out with naked power. It says the real life Edward III had his Italian bankers locked up in the Tower of London until they waived his debts. But eventually the power of commerce began to squash the power of kings, and feudalism gave way to capitalism. There's merchants, bankers, and in order for all of that to have any meaning, you have to have the rule of law come in, and kings have to become accountable to constitutional rights. So basically the power gets spread out and transferred away. But the article pretty much agreed that that would probably be too boring for the story.
Well, I mean, part of the – no, it may not be too boring for the story. I mean, because really my understanding is that this entire structure in this story is really based off of the Hundred Year War between the Lancasters and the Yorks. So it is based on an actual event that did happen in English
history. But there were no White Walkers threatening to come in and
– Oh, really? Are you sure?
Oh, I don't know my history.
No, I'm kidding. Of course there's no White Walkers. Well,
they could be a metaphor for something.
It could be a metaphor for something.
But I don't
know. But no, I like it. That's kind of cool. I mean, who knows? Maybe. I mean, like I said, there is just the fact that there's already a basis for something with the Hundred Year Wars and that kind of thing, but that's okay.
Yeah. You
know, that works.
I mean, I'm sure that if they do follow a line that is an allegory, they'll find a way to make it thrilling.
And you gotta love a show that can generate this sort of
debate, dialogue.
You know, and dialogue, well, and the fact that it's...
he has a prediction. He says, okay. Sometime, the writer of this article in TheGuardian.com, so sometime in season 5 or 6, I predict the Lannisters are going to fall as the feudalists did, unless they discover some previously unknown territory full of gold and easily killable people, just as the Spanish monarchy did during the real-world crisis of feudalism. Then he says, this part I found really interesting. It has always been a mystery as to whether there is a land to the west across the sea from Westeros. My suspicion is there has to be, and someone will soon be dispatched to find it. That'd be interesting to
That is an interesting idea. Yeah. Bit. I mean, you got the, well, because you do across the narrow sea, you do have a whole lot of land into the land of Ashai, which is where Quaithers from, Melisandre from the land of Ashai? I don't remember. But you do have a whole land over to the east. But to the west, I've never even considered that.
I don't
know. Never even considered that. I did see a really funny thing recently where somebody showed a picture of England with Ireland turned upside down and stuck on the south end of England.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Westeros.
Oh, maybe that's
it.
What
really
they did,
does. Huh? It's kind of fun. It was like, oh my God, I'll never look at it the same again. It was kind of impressive. Another little news item, and I don't know if this is still going on or not, but you know Christian Narn, the fellow who plays Hodor, he's actually a DJ.
Yeah.
And because I understand he's not going to be in season 5, he's been doing a tour called Rave of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
He was just in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I know.
Dang it. We should have went to that.
I heard about it the day before it was happening. I was like, oh, I can't make it. But that would have been really cool.
I know.
So really, I don't know if the tour is still going on, but check your local listings. Wherever you may be able to catch Hodor spinning some records. And that would be really, really awesome.
Hodor. I want to find out how to be an extra on the show. I'd say it's a huge long shot since they're filming in all these European locations. And if I knew for sure I could be an extra, I would fly over.
Go
there
to Dubrovnik. Well, I'll tell you what, Dubrovnik is beautiful. I've been to Dubrovnik in what is now Croatia. When I was there, it was Yugoslavia. So that's King's Landing.
They were doing some filming in Spain, I think, right now, or fairly recently.
Anyway. Well, and I think that's going to be Dorne.
I don't know what. I don't know.
Sorry.
Oh, Dorne. Oh, got Dorne. Yeah,
so that'll be the southern lands where
Oberyn was from.
Yeah.
Oberyn was from, yeah.
The Red Viper.
That's cool. All right.
That's good. Let's go to Mallorca. Let's party a bit.
That would be so cool. Because I saw, you know, I've been an extra on The Walking Dead where you get dirtied up and ripped bland clothes and made into a zombie, which is awesome.
I could see you on Game of Thrones.
But Game of Thrones, they have all these like, you know, leather armor or peasant's clothes, which isn't too far away from
zombies.
But
I see it perfectly. It'd be awesome.
Because I haven't shaved in a while. But there's all kinds of really cool, and they're fitted more, you know.
Yeah.
I saw this little featurette on HBO.com. It just looks thrilling. And you can be in some, like, riotous crowd yelling at the king or something like that.
All right, so let's kickstart this. Game of microphones, go on to be extras in Game of Thrones.
Anybody with contacts. Awesome. I don't know how hard it would be. No, I actually read that they needed like, I forget how many, it was like 1,000 warriors and like 62,000 people showed up.
What?
So it might not be so easy to get on.
Oh, that would be cool.
It would be cool. We'll see if there's a way. Maybe where there's a will, there's a way. All right, let's move on to Raven's calls. You want to read the email?
Sure.
Go ahead. We got one email since yesterday.
All right, so we got the one here, and it is from KTS. Hey, guys, I just want to say I'm super excited that there's finally an awesome Game of Thrones podcast out there. I can't wait for you guys to discuss theories, talk about certain characters, and just have an awesome time geeking out over this fantastic show. Thank you guys so much. P.S. Stark is love. Stark is life.
Stark is death.
Sadly, that's...
Thank you. I am so excited to geek out on this show, and I'm really stoked to be doing something different than Walking Dead. I love Walking Dead, but
yeah,
it's going to
be
really fun to do this totally different kind of thing.
No, it's going
to
be a lot of...
Get into it.
And I'm just, you know, as I can kind of mention, like, I feel like I'm out of Game of Thrones practice.
But we'll get into it quick once it starts up.
Exactly. And that's what I'm excited about.
All right. That's it for Raven's Call. Let's move on to Book Talk. Anything about season 4? Since you just said you're out of the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, and practice. I am out of the game. But I mean, I will say this one thing about season 4 that did pass was it was the first. So I don't know if you and Grace talked about this when you guys did the intro for the season 3 one about how even in season 3, there were elements. Or maybe it was season 4 here, where they were incorporating bits from book 5. Mm-hmm. Everything to do with Theon
is from book 5.
Is from book 5. Because we think Theon is dead in book 2. Uh-huh. We don't hear from him again until book 5.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, you don't even know it's Theon unless you're really paying attention because he's even going by
week. And is it Ramsay Snow? He's the same character in the book?
Yes.
That...
sort of. There are some differences. So there was so much information that was already... We are caught up with Theon's story from book 5. Mm-hmm. There was at least one item in season 4 that was an actual spoiler for book fans, and that was when we...
The White Walker.
The White Walker being...
Taking the baby.
Exactly.
And infecting it with White Walker-ness.
Yeah. With the blueness.
Yeah.
That was all new.
That was
so
amazing.
It was amazing. One of my favorite things. So they've really been incorporating a whole lot of things from books 4 and 5, pushed it forward. Yet at the same time, there were a lot of things that were still right on. Like the Red Viper in the mountain going at it. That's right on cue. I mean, and
Joffrey's poisoning.
And that was the other weird thing with seasons 3 and 4 was that they'd split up the third book for that.
Right.
Now, with this season, what I'm really excited about is...
It'll be a combination of books 4 and 5.
Yeah, right? And it's going to have I think it's going to be very book 4 heavy, because there's a lot of stuff in book 4. Again, the way these books are structured, as you know, they're POV chapters.
Yeah.
Book 4 did not contain certain characters at all. Mm-hmm. Tyrion was not at all in book 4.
Oh, that was probably the big one that made people... Because I've heard people
were
like,
livid about
the people we care about? We already waited years.
It was so frustrating. And that's the big one that stands out to me. And although
Who was the second most beloved character that wasn't in book 4?
Brienne was pretty heavy. Cersei was pretty heavy in book 4. A lot of the Dornish people that we haven't met yet are heavy in book 4, which is why they're doing all this filming in Spain. Who honestly can't remember.
Okay.
Oh, Jon Snow.
Okay. So they should have given fans Jon Snow.
Mm-hmm.
So that then they wouldn't have been maybe they still would have been upset that Tyrion wasn't there.
Well, and I think the biggest issue was the 6-year wait.
Yeah.
Between books, which we're in the midst of right now.
We shouldn't complain. They're both out now, so.
Well, those are.
I wonder if people
now we're champing at the bit for book 6. It's frustrating.
I wonder if people appreciate book 4 now that book 5 came out, you know?
You do. I think you absolutely do. Yet everybody I've spoken to since that point who's been reading it from the beginning up to now, everybody says book 4 is a bit of a slog.
That's the weak link in the chain.
That's the weak link so far. A Feast for Crows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but now after having read book 5, in my brain, it is amalgamated because they run fairly concurrently. Mm-hmm. But there's one point in book 5 where they, about midway through, where they... get to that live portion where suddenly it's all new information where it's stopped being concurrent and it's moving forward.
Got it.
So there's a lot of stuff to come as far as what happened with season four.
Any other big points that you can think of that were significantly different or?
No, I mean, the thing I was most struck by, and again, I'm going back from memory. I haven't watched it again since it aired, but it was a matter of the things. And I do feel this way throughout the entire series so far is everything that they have changed. It's usually been for the better, you know, in terms of different media, you have a different way of storytelling.
Because with Walking Dead, you can't always say that. Some of the things are better in the comic.
Yes.
And some better on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with Game of Thrones, you think that for the most part, the changes they made for the show are better.
For the media that they're doing it in, yes.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
I really do. I think there's just no way to really bring that kind of complexity and minutiae to a TV show and have it make any sense. Mm-hmm. And really, the book, there's so much about food. The most of it would be a Food Network show. So that would be a wholly different thing as well. Right. But I loved it. I mean, I loved the changes that they made. There were some things, you know, certain characters that are not in the show that I wish were there. And I can't even think of the specifics right now. Or like Pod, who I love in the book. And I like what they've done with him on the show to a certain degree. Pod
What's different?
Well, for instance, in the show, they've made him like this weird little sex god with the prostitutes.
He wasn't that in the book?
No. I think he stutters.
Thought that was an interesting idea, but I don't believe it because he doesn't have the vibe. And if you're going to be that good in bed, you need to have that vibe. You know what I mean?
And I think he stutters in the book. He does not in the show. You know, he's much more fumbly, kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's some Danny things. Weird little, again, we're getting into the minutiae and this is just nitpicking, but like when the dragon just breathes fire on that one dude, just kills him right there. In the book, he charges him. But in the book, he like picks up his head and just eats it.
Oh, you know, man, they should have done that. That would have been awesome.
There are some weird little extra violence or you know, and then you get sex position on the show.
The only reason I can think of not to do that is it just... would it cost more money? I guess.
Oh, Danny's girlfriend. There's no, you know, she and Missandei have a little bit of a relationship in the book. That's not, there is no, this Grey Worm Missandei relationship. The eunuch does not have a relationship in the book. So there's a lot of stuff around Danny that's very different. A lot of stuff.
They tend to put more, Grace and I talked about this last week, but more emphasis on romantic relationships.
Oh, yeah.
In the show.
For sure.
Yeah.
Dario, for instance, you know, now granted, we had two different actors for him between seasons three and four. Fabio and then this other guy who's pretty damn awesome. I like this new guy. He at least fondles the hilts of his swords correctly. And they finally showed the hilts having breasts. But in the book, he has a purple forked beard, a gold tooth. He's basically Jack Sparrow. I'm glad they toned that down in the show. You know, this winking eyeliner wearing sort of drag queen of a pirate. It's weird. That's Dario as well. So I don't know.
Or Johnny Depp.
Yeah. That's all I really think I want to say about the books at this point. Great. But it's I'm excited because we are going to be covering a lot of things that are not as entrenched in A Song of Ice and Fire lore, you know, because of books 4 and 5. Yet I know we're also going to be getting spoilers from book 6 and 7. Mm-hmm. He just released a new chapter from book 6.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe you guys are going to think I'm stupid, but no. I've been like, when is winter going to come? And then maybe never, but I'm like, oh wait, book 6 is called Winds of Winter.
Yeah.
That's winter's coming in book 6. And then book 7 is called A Dream of Spring. So they're in the middle of winter dreaming of spring. I mean, it seems pretty straightforward.
Well, but you know, in a world that's had how many years of summer?
I'm just saying.
I don't take anything at face value for sure,
but I that's my suspicion.
Is the concept of winter simply a metaphor?
No, they've been pretty clear in the show about.
But as far as the winds of winter, I mean, this could be White Walkers coming south, you know.
That'd be fine.
And that is something that is, you know, so funny how it is more heavily referenced in the pilot episode about the North pushing south with the dire wolf showing up in the south for the first time in so many hundreds of years, the White Walkers and all this. It's that was more projected in that first season than it has been ever since there, because they've been so wrapped up in the soap opera that is the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, so they've been ignoring. And this is such a key. That's why Stannis goes to the wall in the north, because he understands what the genuine threat is. Oh my God, I forgot all about Stannis and Melisandre and Davos. My God, I'm starting to get excited for this show right now. Yeah, it's coming back, man. Totally. That's cool. So,
well, it's this Sunday, so.
Yes.
Coming up.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Game of Thrones.
All right, that's our show, episode 4. Thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to write into us, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check out our websites at gameofmicrophones.com and podcastica.com.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica. Next episode is our first episode of the new season. Woo. And season 5, episode 1. Hosts for this episode will be me, Karen, and Grace.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And if you're fighting the mountain, don't get cocky.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.